You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners right here on BD Spotlight. This is the Business Day's weekly podcast just around the economy, what's going on in and around the economy, and everything that has to do with the rands and the nairas. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and I will be your host on today's show. So for today, we are focusing a little bit just around what's going on with consumer activity in the economy. And then later on, one of the big talking points at the moment is the national health insurance, details of which were announced sometime last week. And then we're just going to be talking. And on the line, we are joined by our expert. That's Mike Schussler, who is the chief economist at economists.co.za. And he will be helping us to maybe know, understand some of the insights that have been released, because Banks of Africa, if you don't know, it is a platform it's a clearinghouse that facilitates payments and clearing with some of the banks in the region. And they have released their monthly economics transaction index called the BETI. So that is the BankServ Economic Transactions Index for July, and that came out today. And the BETI is the fastest now indicator of broad economic activity in South Africa. So we're just going to be unpacking this with Mike, and then we'll take the discussion forward from there. How are you, Mike?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a wonderful getting out of the winter a bit. I think we're starting to see a little bit of spring, and I think we all need a bit of bright sunshine.
Yeah, no, we are moving into summer, but please can you just let our listeners know what perhaps is the coldest month of the year, what that was like in terms of economic activity for South Africans, according to the BETI?
Well, it was a very flat month in the sense that we, it wasn't negative. And on a year ago, we did grow at 2.4%. But month on month, there was no change. And I think it's an indication that we're still in a very flat spot in the economy. And I think economically-wise, it was probably the coldest period that we've seen at the beginning of the year, rather than in the middle of the year, which is our traditional winter. And economically speaking, I think we're just sort of, maybe not at spring yet, we're moving from the negative to the positive, and hopefully, and we are seeing a very flat economy still. And that might continue for another few months or a few quarters. I have no doubt that things will get better. The only question is when. But at the moment, I think South African consumers and therefore South African businesses, because we measure that in this process too, are feeling the heat still. And I think we're starting to see the first little sign of turn, in the sense that the BETI is at its highest point in a year, but there is a bit of a, let's put it this way, a low base effect in it. It's not perfect, but I think that we are at least getting behind the very destructive first quarter of South Africa. I think in my mind, the first quarter in South Africa of this year was the most destructive quarter that we brought upon ourselves. We saw the Great Recession, if you remember 2008-2009, but that's from cold winds blowing in elsewhere. Low commodity prices, panic in the markets. This was totally self-inflicted. The world economy was still growing at a reasonable pace. It slowed down 0.1 or 0.2 points. We still saw growth in America. We saw growth in the UK, which has turned negative now. But we saw growth everywhere, even in China. In China, growth had slowed a bit, but we're still talking 6% growth. Here in South Africa, all of a sudden, we're at minus 3.2%. And that was due to the electricity impacts. The Betty picked that up. As we say, it's a broad indicator. It has a 0.97 correlation with the domestic economy. With the whole economy, it has about a 0.95 relationship. So it's a very strong relationship it has with the economy. It works well with a coincident indicator of the Reserve Bank, but it's available far earlier. The Reserve Bank uses 13 indicators. We use, just data from transactions, which is obviously millions, billions of these transactions, but it at least gives us a fairly good idea in the markets where there's no competition for our payment service, Bank Serve Africa. And
yeah, because I was actually going to ask, sorry to interject, how do you guys actually measure the economic activity, and how do you actually end up choosing what elements to consider for the Betty?
Well, we consider all the elements where BankServe is the only provider in the market. So BankServe is the only clearer of checks. Your check is cleared by your bank, but BankServe puts all the checks together because your check will go to another bank or whatever the case may be. And it looks at all the interbank transactions, such as real-time clearing, such as EFT credit, EFT debits, what they call early debit orders and non-authorized early debit orders. So it gives us a very fair idea. We leave out salaries because we do a take-home pay for South Africa, and we also leave out pensions because we do a pension index. Those are left out. We also leave out social grants because it will be double counting otherwise. If you're counting people's salaries and the social grants and the pensions they get and how they spend it, you're double counting.
Okay.
So we then look at where the spending or how much of the spending takes place. We obviously deflate it with inflation and the PPI. Because a lot of our transactions are also business-to-business transactions. And we count the number of transactions to give us another idea, what's going on. And if we look at this whole thing, we're not using money drawn at ATMs, for example, because other people also provide ATM services. But we are getting, that money will come in because that guy is still transacting between himself and the banks that that have to provide him with the money to put in the ATM. So we'll see the electronic forms of the transactions, but we see a very good idea of, or this gives us a very good idea very early on as to how a month went. We're seeing worldwide now a much more emphasis on what they call now indicators. So you're going to see, for example, in the UK, where they measure the GDP monthly. It's not perfect, but it's getting there. They do the same in Russia. And they use these sort of indicators because it's available quicker and gives authorities a quicker feedback on what's happening, as well as market players. And it's still experimental in the UK, the monthly one, but we find that there's a lot of these sort of indicators. We all know the well-known PMIs and car sales around the world come out fairly quickly, but that's only two aspects of an economy. Manufacturing makes up much less, so we see the PMI for services come to the fore. But even that doesn't necessarily indicate what's happening at banks and many other levels. Mining and agriculture are not measured in that. So people are looking for these sort of now indicators, and ours follows a methodology that you see others follow in different various ways. For example, the SWIFT index from the international banking system, if you wish, from that tracks international trade, gives us a very quick idea as what's happening with international trade. So these now indicators, such as the Betty, are coming more and more to the fore. I don't think it's a It's a, you know, perfect 100% match for everything, but I think it's a much better match than the single indicators that we've had before. So these broader indicators are giving us a fairly good idea of what's happening in the real economy. We see in Holland and in Germany where their indices coming out 3 weeks after the end of the month, which looks at harbor traffic and container traffic through 85 ports, and I think the other one is 80 ports, but it doesn't matter. The point is to give us an idea of world trade very quickly. World payment systems are used very often now, and we're one of 16 or 17 countries in the world where we have a national payment system. The U.S. does not have a national payment system. So ultimately, this provides us, of all the interbank transactions, a fairly good idea what's going on the ground in the last month or so. And yes, we standardize it. We see there's a lot more traffic on the banking network on weekdays. So we make allowances for weekdays, length of the month, inflation and everything, and it gives us a fairly accurate picture as to what's going on or what the trend in the economy is doing. And I think we will see a better second quarter that we can see already. We will see growth in the second quarter. The third quarter starts off a bit flattish for me. And so the bounce back has become flatter, but I think at least we're not falling again. And I think that's important from where we've come from. I think the first quarter was such a shock for us in South Africa, I spoke to business people and everybody was just down and out. And, when you do presentations, if you had anything positive to say, you were virtually not believed. So it's becoming a good indicator to show us what's happening. And we did give a warning that the first quarter's data wouldn't be great. We didn't think it was going to be quite as bad as it was, but we knew it was going to be a negative quarter. And I think, economists are needing these sort of indicators, and that's where we are.
So we are on the line with Mike Schussler, who is the chief economist at economist.co.za, just giving us a roundup of the BankServe Economic Transactions Index. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this.
The cryptocurrency revolution is a rabbit hole that goes deeper than just Bitcoin and blockchain. South Africa's revolutionary cryptocurrency investment platform, Revix, presents Beyond Bitcoin, your guide to the crypto future. Unpack the news, trends, and terminology live every Monday on The Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. You can also download every episode on the Cliff Central app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is Business Day Spotlight. We are talking economic activity, and we are about to sort of get into some discussion around our national health insurance. We're on the line with Mike Schussler, who is chief economist at economist.co.za, just giving us a roundup of the BankServe Africa Economic Transactions Index, otherwise known as the BETI. And he says that it's been flat at the moment, just an indication of the fact that things aren't changing and that consumers are still under pressure, and also just letting us know that there has been a rise in what they are calling now indexes, as opposed to measuring economic activity on an annualized basis. People are turning more and more towards these shorter periods, quarterly or even month on month. So Mike, I just wanted to check with you in the context of the different reportings that are done in South Africa, the different economic indicators, where does the BETI actually, where do you think it actually falls on the spectrum? You've got the annual GDP numbers. I think Stats SA does some quarterly numbers as well. And you've also got the PMI numbers that come out from APSA and the like. Where do you guys sort of see yourselves on the spectrum?
I think we're an indicator of current activity, so GDP activity. We come out before the GDP. We're already in July. Later on today, you're going to find, other figures come out. And when they come out, they're for June. So we're already a month ahead of that. And then only can they start putting the GDP numbers together. which normally takes another few weeks. So we will see the GDP numbers only next month, whereas we already had a very good idea as to what the economy was doing. It might not be exact GDP numbers, but we know the trend. And I think we fall in the same category probably as the PMI, car sales, but we're just a bit broader. And I don't think we're the most important at all, but because I think there are other figures other than GDP that are important. You know, unemployment and inflation are important. Unemployment in South Africa's context is, for me, extremely important. At least we give a feedback very quickly. The type of people that use our data are typically other economists, sometimes a bit of fund managers, but also I think it's going into the real world databases where other people are starting to use it. It's taken some time. We've been around for 6-7 years. So I think we're starting to get traction in the broader sense. We find that data providers that sell data to the market want our indicator now. So that is a very good indication that people want the indicator. But I think it's just one of many indicators. Ours is just the earliest, broadest one, which I think is important overall. The PMI service, the PMI manufacturing, the car sales, we're in that category.
Yeah. Okay. No. Thank you for that. I think now is perhaps a good point at which we can actually then shift the conversation to NHI and the National Health Insurance, because it's been quite a bit of a topical issue. We've seen that healthcare stocks have actually lost more than 14 billion rand of their value on the JSE in the last couple of days since details were revealed on Thursday. And we perhaps wanted to maybe link to see what sort of predictions do you have just around how the Betty, for example, or just general economic activity would change if the NHI was to be implemented in its current form?
In previous studies have found that we need about 4-5% extra as a percentage of GDP to fund the National Health Insurance. And I'm not sure if that's going to work and if what's going to happen to the private hospitals. They'll probably stay, but what we actually need to do is look at the public sector hospitals. Why are they so bad? Now, first of all, we already spend quite a lot of money on our public hospitals, about 4% or so of GDP, and in fact going to 5% soon over time. And that would put us maybe not in first world, but we certainly on the higher side of the developing markets. We spend a lot of money on these hospitals, yet we don't have efficiency in them. We have patients from other countries. The health minister, previous health minister said, Aaron Motsoaledi said that 47% of the babies born in public hospitals in Johannesburg were foreign. If that is the case, that's a very high percentage. And I'm saying if that is the case, then we're overworking our staff and our taxpayers are paying a lot for that. We need to find a solution to that, though. We can't leave people alone. So we need to do things that other countries have done. Even Germany has done that. Call in the International Red Cross. Call in Doctors Without Borders. Ask them for help. Ask the international community through the UN and the World Health Organization and so on, can we please set up hospitals nearer our borders? The patients don't have to travel as far. So, because he called it health tourism. Because the hospitals aren't working in other countries next to us very often. So we can put hospitals there and the babies can be born there. We can do certain cases there and that will bring down our cost. It will also allow other people to do work there. In other words, international border doctors, our borders could bring in doctors, other organizations could bring in relevant skills, and it would employ some of our own people, you know, whether it be as doctors or as security people. I think that's something that we need to look at. Then we can start looking at the efficiency of our hospitals. In other words, let's fix the corruption. Let's look at the system. How do we get people in and out? And how do we do everything from primary health care right through to aftercare of the patient? And then we could bring in the private hospital expertise that we have in this country, maybe in a form of management consultants for a while, maybe as long as a decade, but to turn these hospitals into more efficient places that work. And also, to think of the staffing of these hospitals properly, because very often, we have top-heavy structures in South Africa, and we don't have enough Indians. So we need to look at all those sort of things. Everybody has a title. When I go to some places in South Africa, particularly some SOEs and government departments, I've noticed that I'm always talking to a director of some sort or another. And, I think we shouldn't call our traffic policemen, we should call them traffic directors. Jokes aside, the fact of the matter is health is an important issue, because why do people pay so much for private healthcare? Well, they don't want to go to hospitals that don't function. And if they're going to pay a lot more money and they're going to go to hospitals that don't function, those that can move will. And that will make us all poorer, because the people that can move are the doers and the shakers and the people that make things happen very often. They're the important oil in the economy, if you wish. Also, for the doctors and nurses, they will just be overstrained. The government will try to push down salaries that way, because they're the only people that will be paying the majority of doctors by far. Now they do pay the majority, that's true, but instead of 60-40, it will become like 95-5. And under those circumstances, a lot of the doctors will not feel satisfied and will have much less control over their lives and are more likely to leave for other places, because if you go to the health service in Britain, not going quite as overworked as our doctors, because we have far fewer doctors than most places in the world. And that's another thing. If you want to manage this process and you want to get to where you can deliver a quality healthcare, if you've got less than five doctors, or we've got less than two doctors per, 10,000 or 100,000, the world average is well over five. It doesn't matter how much money I throw at this situation, I've still got only so many doctors. So the first thing I would do is I would say to the universities, how do we double your intake for a period of 2 decades? What do we do there? And we bring in more doctors. Yes. And maybe the same with nurses, the same with radiotechnology people, the people that do your x-rays, right through to the specialists, the people that put you to sleep when you're having an operation. I think that's important. I think it's important that we consider how we do this and make it better before we just say, oh, we're going to have this thing, we're going to give it a nice acronym, and we're going to pump money and get more money. What we should be doing is saying, how do I get more doctors? How do I make my doctors better? How do I make my nurses better? How do I manage the patient flow? How do I stream the patients so that my taxpayers get the benefit that they pay for? And at the other end of the scale, how do I also treat people that come from other countries and be fair to them? And how can I get international help in for that? I think that's important. And I think all those things come together. And then how do I manage a hospital? I think we've got some of the best hospital expertise. I know people via HASA and so on from our major hospitals and independent hospitals, and we have very good hospital expertise. In fact, our hospitals have gone into Britain, into Poland, into the United States, and they're doing okay. It's not brilliant, but it shows that they can manage on an international scale. So I think that is important for us going forward.
Mike, in the interest of time, we only have room for one more question, and I just wanted to maybe get your thoughts In the context of NHI, how do you think this feeds into some of the considerations for international ratings agencies, for example? Because we've seen that these agencies often look at some of the policy decisions that the South African government makes. I think a few weeks ago they announced a plan to capitalize Eskom, for example, and we immediately saw a reaction from Moody saying that something that's credit negative. So in terms of the NHI, do you think they're taking some of these pronouncements seriously, or are they waiting to see how it will be implemented?
No, I think they're taking them very seriously. The closer we get to the NHI period of 2026, they will start factoring in lower growth. And when we get lower growth, our GDP per capita, which is already declining and is in world terms in a relative decline now for the best part of a decade and a half compared to the world average, they would take that into consideration that, you know, 7 years from now, we're going to struggle to grow faster than population growth, at least the initial period where you have this big tax shock, and then you're going to buy stuff from the big tech shop. But yeah, it's going to have an impact, and people are going to rethink where their businesses are. You might see, for example, a transport business in Nelspruit decide to move to Maputo because the tax rates are going to be higher. So, you know, they'll take that into account, and they're already going to take into account how do we pay back our debt. And our debt burden is already, we know, in the next 2 years going to probably surpass 68% of GDP, just government debt. Then they're going to say, okay, that's 2020 when that happens. It's not coming down soon. And then after 2026, when NHI comes in, there's going to be very little room to maneuver that. Because you can't just tax people more and more and more. At the same time, you're taxing them for the more for the health insurance. You may need to tax them more for debt repayments. So you would stop the economy dead if you did all that at the same time. So it does increase our risks. I'm sure they'll see that way. Obviously, because it's 2026, it's not an immediate risk, but it's something that they will start dating into their forecast. And typically, their forecasts are sort of a five-year period that they're looking at. So it will become a much more important play next year and the year after, because look, their forecasts next year this time are from 2021 to 2026.
Yeah.
And that's when it will start coming in. It won't happen probably before the end of next year, but they will already be factoring that in. And that's something that we will need to, you know, explain. And they will wonder already now, how can we announce this without having done the budget and having done a study that says you need to do more work on this, you need to get a lot of things. You've got these consultants in, I think they're called Genesis. It didn't work out so pretty for you, but you're still going ahead. Sorry, that doesn't sound like prudent to me. So that does thing. And the thing is, you know, we've made a lot of promises to the rating agencies and to international investors, which we kept. Now, this is the one promise I think they want us not to keep. So, you know, we better believe that they don't believe us. So, at some stage soon. I don't think it'll impact for the downgrade now, but it could bring in more downgrades, say, from 2022 onwards, when they start reviewing that sort of data again. But that's about the best answer I can give you how it will play with the rating agencies.
So that's been us with Mike Schussler, who is the chief economist at economists.co.za. Quite a broad discussion that we're having, starting out with just some highlights from their BankServe Africa Economic Transactions Index, otherwise known as the BETI, letting us know about what's going on in and around the economy based on some of the transaction information that they have as the biggest clearinghouse in the region and the only one as well. And he's just letting us know that at the moment for July, the value of economic transactions showed no monthly change, which reflects the persistent stagnant state of the South African economy. Also letting us know that they see themselves sort of as one of the more immediate economic indicators, because they seem to be ahead of some of the others, especially some of the quarterly GDP numbers together with some of the PMIs. And then we then moved on to the issue of national health insurance, which is a big talking point at the moment. And Mike is just letting us know that it's a very big plan, and it's a very big plan that perhaps needs to be rethought, and especially when it comes to injecting the necessary skills, when it comes to nurses and doctors, we should have a plan in place. You can throw as much money as you want at the problem, but if there's no professional people to actually take care of the sick, dying and wounded, then it means nothing at the end of the day. So thank you so much to Mike. He's also letting us know that this might also be a consideration for international ratings agency agencies as they decide the investment grade of South Africa, especially from about 2021, as their 5-year projections start taking into consideration the possible implementation of the NHI. Mike, how can people get in touch with you? Perhaps those that want to maybe get a newsletter or see some of your other research?
Well, they can contact us. My email is mike@economists.co.za.
Okay, so you heard it. That's mike@economists.co.za. So that's been it for today. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Life. That is under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then you can also find us on Twitter. Our hashtag is #BDSpotlight. Remember that you can also subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Mueller. So for myself, Mudiwa Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.